If you're young, single, and broke, you've got company. According to Pew Research Center, in 2019, 38% of American adults aged 25 to 34 were single, meaning neither married nor living with a partner. Again, that's 38%. That's up from 29% back in 1990. The study found other big changes in that time span. In 1990, two-thirds of adults between 25 and 54 were married. By 2019, it was down to just over half. Meanwhile, unmarried cohabitation rose from 4 to 9%. And the data shows that single people are worse off economically than those who are married and those who are living together. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Want to know your story, especially if you're in those younger age ranges. Let us know if you're married, single, or living with a partner and what led to that decision. If you're not married, do you want to be someday, or are you pretty happy with that current arrangement? How's that different from what your parents are doing? And if you're watching younger generations, maybe in your own family, what are you seeing? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Stephanie Kuntz is the Director of Research and Public Education for the Council on Contemporary Families at the University of Texas at Austin. She's also an Emeritus Faculty of History and Family Studies at the Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington, and author of a bunch of books on gender, family, and history, including Marriage, A History, How Love Conquered Marriage. Stephanie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you, Rob.
Well, first of all, let's start with the number of people married. No surprise to you. I think we've talked about this before, younger people getting less likely to be married over the years. Can you talk about that trend?
Well, absolutely. I think there's a lot of unnecessary panic and dramatization of this. Mm-hmm. Back in the 1960s, when 90% of Americans did marry, the highest proportion ever, half of all women married before they even turned 21. The age of marriage has been steadily rising, and that means if you take the proportion of people aged 25 to 40 who aren't married, it's going to sound like, oh my gosh, it's really been falling since the 1960s. But actually, as of 2014, 80% of Americans had been married by the time they were in their 40s. Now, that's a lot later than in earlier years, but it means that marriage is not necessarily dying. We're just spending a lot more time outside marriage, and people are putting off marriage much longer than they used to.
And what's behind that story, which is really behind the story of those numbers I gave? What is leading us to get married later than, say, a couple few generations ago?
Well, I think there are a couple things that help explain the increased delay. I mean, first of all, let's start by going back to the 50s or 60s when everybody got married so early. There were a couple things that explained that. It was one of them I think people might think was a pretty good idea, and that is that in the 50s and 60s, there were rising real wages for young men. A young man could take almost any job and expect his earnings to improve substantially over time, to have job security. So it was obviously a little more optimistic about starting a family. The other side of the reason that more people got married then was that it was the opposite way for women. The only way they could participate in the economic prosperity in a time when help-wanted female was at much lower wages. A woman with a college degree earned less than a man with a high school degree if she was able to find a full-time job. So they had to get married. And since then, we've seen a number of changes. First of all, women have gained more options. They can put off marriage. They can have education. And incidentally, the longer a woman puts off marriage and the more education she gets, the less likely it is to divorce once she does get married. But the other side of the coin is that men, the real wages for men, for many men, the high school graduate, for example, back in the 50s and 60s, who could expect his wages to rise steadily, his wages have been falling. So marriage is a more kind of problematic risk than it used to be for both men and for women, even though there are some high payoffs to getting married if you find the right partner.
Talking to Stephanie Kuntz with the Council on Contemporary Families, author of books including Marriage, A History, talking about changes in whether and, more importantly, maybe when we get married. Younger people less likely to be married than we used to. We tend to get married later in life than we used to. You can join in 800-642-1234. I'd love to hear your story of deciding when and whether to get married, whether you have yet or are planning to do it someday or aren't planning on it at all, and what drives that decision for for you. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Stephanie, that Pew study I mentioned earlier, one thing that puzzled me a little bit, they seem to be saying that married people got an economic benefit from marriage. Unmarried people, single people in these age groups, not doing as well. And that made me wonder, okay, is there something about being married that makes you make more money? Or is there something about having more money that makes you more likely to get married in the first place?
Well, most of it goes the opposite way. You know, there are some ways in which singles are punished by the society that doesn't recognize that many of them also have obligations, caregiving obligations and stuff. But most single people are not poorer because they aren't married. More often, they haven't married because they don't earn enough to feel secure about getting married or don't have a pool of potential partners. That's another way in which we're different from the 50s and 60s. It takes two incomes to make a family work today. And so it's not just women who are looking for a man who has decent earnings and prospects, and you can count on to maybe stay the course with you that you got a pretty good chance with. It's women, men are looking for the same thing in women. So the result is that people are putting off marriage until the lucky ones are putting it off until they get their education. And educated men and women are actually the most likely to marry now. And educated women are much more likely than they were in the past. They're also much less likely to divorce. Whereas on the other hand, people who have less than a college education, their real wages have been falling, job insecurity has been rising, income volatility has been increasing. And so it's a really hard trade-off. On the one hand, yes, if you meet somebody who you think can hold down a job, will hold down a job, will be reliable, then there are economic advantages to marrying. You can pool your resources, you know, you can specialize more in different kinds of things. You can save money. You can both earn more money. But on the other hand, it's a bigger risk than it used to be because divorce is more easy, job loss is more easy. So women in particular are beginning to think, you know, okay, here's the risk. Should I invest in my own earnings power, stay single, wait until I'm really sure that I can afford to buy into a marriage and won't be ruined if, you know, and I think of it sometimes like playing poker, that if you have enough of a financial commission to make the, a cushion to make the minimum opening bid, and, you know, if you lose a hand, you know that you can still support yourself, it's a really good deal. Bet the whole pot emotionally and materially. But if you don't, it's kind of risky.
We might think love conquers all. Do you think we have this element rational, or, you know, overtly or maybe deep down, this level of, calculation in our marriage prospects still?
Oh, I think we always have. Actually, in some ways, it's much less so than in the past when a woman really had to say, and I've read letters and diaries of women who said, well, you know, my heart really inclines to Mike, but John looks like he's the only one who'll be able to support me. Now you've got more ability to marry for love. But at the same time, we have these high expectations of marriage and we have high expectations of what we want out of life. And so people tend to think, well, I want a partner who can pull his or her fair share of the load, both emotionally and materially.
We're looking at marriage trends in the United States as younger people are delaying marriage in many cases, on average, in a lot of cases. Stephanie Kuntz is with us, Director of Research and Public Education for the Council on Contemporary Families. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you're in that younger age group, what are your thoughts on marriage right now? Are you already married? Are you thinking yes, but not for a while? What goes into that kind of decision if you're thinking carefully about it? If you are older, what was your trajectory? Married right out of high school, right out of college, or did you put it off? Why? What led to that? Call in now at 800-642-1234. We've heard the big picture data. Want to hear your examples, your life story, 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. And what's money got to do with it? 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We're talking about the growing number of younger people who are choosing to remain single at least for now. New analysis from Pew Research Center found that 38% of American adults from 25 to 34 were neither married nor living with a partner, up from 29% in 1990. Stephanie Kuntz is helping us understand why that is, why we're delaying marriage more than we used to. She's the Director of Research and Public Education for the Council on Contemporary Families at the University of Texas in Austin, Emeritus Faculty at Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let us know if you've delayed marriage. Is it really a delay if you weren't planning on getting married earlier? If you've decided to get married later in life than previous generations did, you can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts and your story. 800-642-1234. Let's go to your calls now. Janine starts us off in Bayfield. Hi, Janine.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up?
So I just wanted to bring up with getting married, kind of talking about the benefits. Not so much financially. When getting married, your health care, all of that changes, your taxes, those change as well. And I noticed that I lost my health care through that because it went up about 500% the price. So kind of looking how to gauge that.
So those costs you're saying went up when you got married, your health care and your taxes?
Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Thanks, Janine. And Stephanie, that's part of the calculation. I think some people may make the decision to push it over the edge and get married to get access to health care, but those costs factor in.
Well, the tax one is a very interesting, ironic thing because the tax law was changed in the 1940s to encourage male breadwinner families so that it penalized you if you had a second earner in the house. So actually, people who try to reproduce an Aussie and Harriet family, they get a big tax advantage when they're married. But in today's world where actually both partners do tend to work, there are some real tax disadvantages. And supposedly, the whole thing was supposed to increase marriage rates and, you know, create this Aussie and Harriet family that people were so interested in having in the post-war era.
Janine, thanks for that call. That reminds me, you've done some research. This is separate from the Pew stuff I was talking about, Stephanie. Saying in a growing number of households, Harriet may be providing more of the breadwinning than Ozzie. Can you talk about that?
Well, yeah. Actually, this is just out today. There's a new study from Jennifer Glass and Joanna Pepin and Kelly Rayleigh are the ones who did the actual research. Mm-hmm. And they found out that it used to be that married women were seldom the main providers, but about 40% of married women today are the primary earner in their family, which means that you've got a situation where they estimate from their studies that 70% of American women will be the primary provider for their child at some point before the child turns 18. And, you know, that's maybe it won't last for very long, but the average length of time a woman does this is 6 years. So that's another very important reason to think about, you know, who you're marrying, what you're marrying, what you bring to the marriage. And, of course, with the problems with the pandemic, the job losses and cutbacks for women, the lack of good comprehensive child care, it's not just women who are being hurt by this. Children's well-being is being seriously affected if the main provider in a family, as women now often are, is unable to hold down that job.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Kim in Iowa. Kim, hi.
Hello.
What do you want to tell us about, Kim?
Well, I find this topic very fascinating. My husband and I, our marriage is kind of a combination of reasons for late marriage. We had our first marriages, our only marriage. I was 38, he was 42. We're in our 50s now. And he delayed marriage because he grew up in a family situation where there's a lot of discord over finances, and so he wanted to be secure in his career. I, on the other hand, my mom died when I was 17, and I had a 1.5 and a 13-year-old sister. So I did child rearing from 17 to 23 until my dad remarried, and by the time he remarried, I was not interested in starting a family at all. I was done. So... but then by the time I was in my mid to late 30s, I wanted children. So that was our reasons for delay. I think maybe different than mine was different than most people's. But
interesting. Kim, thank you so much for sharing your story. I hope that the first marriage can stay your only marriage. Best of luck to both of you. Stephanie, yeah, there are a lot of different paths, but a lot of them seem to take us to the same place, getting married later.
Yes, absolutely. Well, this is the most interesting thing, is that really there's such a variety nowadays that there's no longer any single type of marriage, and there's no longer any single route to marriage. And in fact, one of the things that's changing now is we're becoming a little bit more like the European countries, where some couples, especially educated couples, may wait until they have a baby and then get married after that. So there's a lot of changes that are going on. But one of the things that people tend to forget is that when people do enter marriage today, divorce rates have been falling for the last 20 years, precisely because there's a greater selection in terms of who marries, and that we wait longer for it, and we tend to be more sure of ourselves, both economically and emotionally.
Thanks a lot for that call and for sharing your story at 800-642-1234. We'll go now to Suzelle in Janesville. Suzelle, hi.
Hi. I was just curious whether the research that you're talking about applies only to opposite-sex couples, or is it also based on same-sex couples?
We haven't had legal same-sex marriage enough to have really good long-term results in terms of divorce rates. But we know that same-sex couples have some tremendous advantages, incidentally, over heterosexual couples. Right now, one of the best predictors of marital satisfaction for a heterosexual couple is how, especially for the woman in it, is how fair the division of housework and childcare is. And one problem that heterosexual couples have is they often just fall into the pattern of reproducing, okay, women do this, men do this, whereas same-sex couples tend to discuss those things a lot more. We found that in general, this material is just coming in, but there is a sense that probably the most stable marriage is the least likely to divorce, and again, possibly because of selection factors, are two males. Female couples tend to have, in many instances, have very satisfying relationships, female-female ones. They understand each other better. They're more on the same page about their emotional conversations. But they also have much higher expectations of intimacy, and sometimes that becomes a problem in a female-female marriage. But one of the things that I think is so exciting about all this diversity we've been talking about is we now can look at what other people are doing and realize we don't have to follow a script. There's all these choices, and we can learn from things that other people are doing. We can pick and choose.
Suzelle, thanks a lot for the call. And Stephanie, I think we've talked about this, the division of labor at home, and it sounds like a takeaway there for anyone in any kind of marriage is talk about it, consciously decide this stuff up instead of just sort of letting things fall where they may.
Exactly. Talking it over is the big predictor. It's not what decisions you end up making, it's how you get there.
Thanks again for that call at 800-642-1234. Stephanie Kuntz is with us from Evergreen State College in Olympia, Washington, looking at some of the latest research on marriage in the United States, people more likely to put off marriage to later years than they used to. Stephanie, I should throw another family member in here. Kids, what's happening when it comes to the timing of couples having, or single people for that matter, having children?
Well, one of the things, their fertility rates have been falling for some time, and of course they fell even more during the pandemic. So we're going to have to see what happens as we come out of that. But one of the things that is quite interesting is that although sole parenting has fallen, actually, unmarried parenting has increased, that many cohabiting couples go ahead and have kids and rather than getting married. And then there are other plenty of people, as I said, like more, not as many in the United States as in Scandinavia, who actually have very stable cohabiting relationships. And even if they have one or two kids without marriage, they often tend to eventually get married. So there's a lot of changes in child rearing. And I think they're connected to a bunch of these same economic and social pressures that we've been talking about.
In our last minute, Stephanie, I know the pandemic has shaken up a lot of people's thoughts about work, a lot of people leaving jobs. I'm sure the data isn't there for marriages and such yet. But what are the big one of the big questions in your mind for how the pandemic might affect our attitude toward our relationships?
Well, I think that some couples have found that and some families have found that, gosh, you know, chasing after extracurricular activities was actually too exhausting and we need to slow down. Others have found that it's just been too much. One interesting thing is that men did step up to the plate in terms of housework and childcare during the pandemic. But the one really bad sticking point was that when it came to something new, like taking over homeschooling, I think the default, without discussing it, was, okay, well, only women can do that, you know? And so that was just a tremendous stress on marriages and on relationships. And we're just going to have to see if people learn the right lessons from this or if, in fact, the conflicts that rose and the tensions are going to outweigh the useful lessons that have been used by some couples, that have been taken by some couples during this pandemic.
Stephanie, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Stephanie Kuntz is the Director of Research and Public Education for the Council on Contemporary Families at the University of Texas at Austin. We talked to her about why more and more young people are delaying marriage and some of the economic effects of that decision.